Good morning and welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike.
Good morning, gentlemen, and happy Tuesday.
We're back at it.
It's another week
at it. It's live again. So we're live. This is not a recorded episode. We are back from, well, I am back from the Fabric Conference that just happened. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of news to talk about now. So we're probably going to take this episode, instead of going actually through like news or blogs or things that came out, we're probably just going to spend most of our time discussing what was announced at the Fabric Conference and what were the main, what we felt like were maybe some of the main points here that will help us change how we build things in the future. What is this going to look like now moving forward? So I think there's some very interesting things here that are going to be happening after listening to all the announcements from the Fabric Conference.
The nice thing is we had the insider. We had you there live.
I was sneaking around the back.
Real time.
Sneaking around the back, trying to figure out what's going on. Hitting some sessions.
You also had a couple sessions, right?
I did. I had two sessions I talked at the conference. I was talking on the Spark debugging experience. So Microsoft has brought Spark to Fabric. But they have kind of done their own flavor on how do you optimize that when something goes wrong? How do you see what happened? If you have a notebook running in a pipeline, how do you go find what command in your notebook failed? So it's definitely way different than what it was when it was inside Synapse. The Synapse has another Spark experience where you can use notebooks, you can write things, but it's very difficult to debug things. So their debugging experience has gotten much, much better. And I was speaking a lot of the point around, you know, why Fabric is so much better than what you've seen in the past. So it was very good session. Had a lot of fun there. Was talking with Jenny on that one. And my second session, which I absolutely love the videos that Mark Cromer puts out. So anyone who's heard anything about Azure Data Factory, Mark, you hear the soothing voice of Mark Cromer on a video, and he walked you through what's going on in pipelines and all these new things you can use. So we were basically talking about what happens if you come from Azure Data Factory or Synapse, and how do you get upgraded pathways, or how do you upgrade yourself into a Fabric type experience? What new things do you get? How do you do things differently? So a lot of things are the same, but we talked a lot about what can we do to get migrated in. And we talked a lot about like what feature gaps that exist currently. And, you know, the product team's working on those feature gaps. They understand that Azure Data Factory is different than pipelines and Fabric. But it seems like they're highly motivated to continue to close gaps, make the experience better, seem more seamless. There's a couple fundamentals that don't exist in Fabric that do exist in other places. For example, you don't have this concept of a service principle. Well, you can use a service principle, but there is no managed identity inside a pipeline. Like the workspace is like all driven by like user identities, right? So when you make a data set, it's based on you, the user, making a data set. So workspace identities hasn't really been fully fleshed out yet, but it's coming, it looks like, but it's just not there quite yet.
They're beginning to do the same thing with the API. The Fabric API is radically different from a security point of view than Power BI. Before we get to all the Fabric, I got to ask.
You can't say that, drop that comment and not elaborate on what you mean by that. It's not wildly different. It's just implemented slightly different.
Security wise, you can't use service principles with the Fabric API.
Not right now.
Not wildly
different.
No. Okay. Yes. It's not a radical shift.
Yes. You made it sound like this is a massive thing. Like, oh, now you have to use, you know, you're not to plug a USB drive in to get access to any Fabric API.
There's no Python. It's Ruby.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Everything now is written in COBOL. You have to really write COBOL to be able to talk to the Fabric API. It's a radically different change.
Everyone. So I have to ask before we get to all the nice Fabric things, you're in Vegas. It's a big food town. How was the food?
It was great. I thought the hotel I was in was, and the whole conference was in the MGM Conference Center. So it's huge. There's lots of things going on there. There's tons of great places to eat. I had some great sushi one night. I had some great Italian. Lucchini, I think it was the name of the restaurant. So it was really good. So in all, it was good eating. I will say being in on the strip, everything is just overpriced. So you're way overpaying for things, even though some of the food is good. You also get a mixed bag. So some places are really good. Other times you get food that's very average. Someone had a burger. They're like, this burger was like very mid at best. And then paid like $45 for it. It was like, whoa, that seems wildly inappropriately priced.
Place to do the gold burgers. So it doesn't make it taste gold.
Yeah.
Gold on it. Yeah. So
there's like every famous internet food show that you've seen has like some chef has got some restaurant there in one of the hotels. Like there's and there's, you know, every single, you know, casino seems to have their person of like what, you know, what kitchen came from a TV show that is now there in one of the casinos. So anyways, that was fun. We also walked a little bit up and down the strip. There was a lot of like really fun, like outdoor eating places. There was one called Beer House, I guess is what you would say. But they were just a huge wide array of taps and a lot of fun to hang out and talk. And yeah, there's a lot of fun activities along the strip as well.
So a 2-point question. How was attendance / how was the overall vibe and experience?
Great question. So attendance was really good. I believe there was over 4,000 people attending the event.
Wow. Really?
So and the reason I'm going to put that number out there, because like comparison wise, Seth and I went to the initial Data Insights Summit, which was out in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I think the very first year was like 1,000 people. And I think the second year they did it was like 2,000, maybe 2,500. So they scaled it up a little bit, but it definitely felt larger than both of those. I mean, it was, but it had the same, let me say it felt like it had the same energy as those events. We heard a lot about Fabric. We heard a lot about data, you know, the things you can now do with it. There was a ton of talk around AI and Copilot and how that's going to help you and like examples around that. So yes, I'm okay with that. I'm still keeping it at a bit of like an arm's length. I think it does add value in certain areas. We'll see how it strategically is placed into the product. Sure. But in general, I felt people were very excited to be there. The energy in the main session hall, there were so many announcements coming. So yeah. I think the main, usually you have keynote.
Even the amount that we're going to try to cover in an hour today, we're probably not going to get through them all. So that is a ton.
Yeah, I mean, the main key, when you go to an event like that, there's like a keynote and usually it's like an hour. There's like an hour. I think we were like an hour and a half, two hours of keynote. So there was a lot of sitting there initially, but there was a lot of things to kind of touch on and have main points around. And there's a lot of stuff coming out from the product team.
Did Arun do the keynote?
Arun jumped into the keynote and then Amir came back and did a lot of like the demo and examples of specific aspects of what's going on in Fabric. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of really good energy there. We had this area called the Community and Ask the Experts area. Super fun to be in. Got to meet a lot of the people that were attending the conference, talk about technical architectures and design things. And like, you know, I'm planning on building this kind of workspace and alignment. And like, well, here's some other patterns. So there's a lot of people, I think, really trying to figure out what patterns are going to work for their organization. Many organizations, I believe, are starting now, even after only going to GA after 4 months. I think there's a lot of companies trying to figure out, okay, this looks like a prod level thing. We're thinking this could be a prod level item that we're going to start pushing into. Let's start figuring out how to use it.
How many different ideas? I mean, I'm sure you heard a ton of different perspectives in terms of how they want to build out their workspaces. To your point, did you hear something off the wall or something we haven't talked about yet? Or
so shockingly, no. I mean, everything kind of fits in kind of what we typically talk about. But one thing I would maybe mention here around designs, it seemed like there was a lot of emphasis on, I don't understand how to secure things yet. Hmm. You know, I think there's a lot of talk around self-service. What does self-service look like? And what can we do? I think a lot of companies have this happening already in their organizations. I think it's more around where do we put it? Where does that fit in this ecosystem? And I think everyone realizes that there's going to be an amount of self-service. And one perspective that I think people were talking a lot about, but they didn't actually address was, we've talked about the podcast a little bit about, okay, there is this concept of like, there's regular workloads. It's like the central BI workloads that are kind of known. We know the inputs. We know the questions people are going to ask. It's kind of common information. That is kind of a known workload. Then there's all this self-service side of things. And self-service seems to be a lot more, let's call it peaky, or have spikes in demand. And you're not necessarily able to gauge when those spikes or in demand are always going to happen. They just are going to occur. something goes bad with data, something, an event happens and we have a lot of usage towards the end of the month.
Yeah,
it's every Monday.
Scheduling heavy stuff for refreshes. And,
yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of emphasis on that, of kind of, you know, a lot of people are talking about the self-service side of things, which is good. But I'm not sure we have clarity on the best way to manage and govern self-service as well. There wasn't any talk of one security. It sounds like there's a new word or a new language just called unified security or something around, security is just built in by default. So the messaging from that standpoint, I felt like that messaging changed slightly. My opinion is the one security story, maybe, I think there was a misconception when they started saying one security and then it never really got landed or we never saw like the actual output of that, but it wasn't that it wasn't secure. It's just that it's not unified yet.
Well, it's the long-term strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Correct. Right. So anyways, there was a new re-emphasis on everything is secure. We're building security into everything. We're doing, you know, that was a very big story here. So being able to use data gateways to use your pipelines to go get data off-prem was huge. Everyone was very excited about that.
It's the VNet one, right?
Like the VNet data gateway. Yeah. Yep. So VNet data gateways are inside where you can create a VNet and then have like your Spark cluster inside that VNet.
Azure,
so that's
your Azure ecosystem.
Yeah, your Azure ecosystem around there as well. There's also trusted workspace access and managed private endpoints. These were things that enterprises will say we have to have these in order to really use this stuff. And that makes a lot of sense. That jives.
So one of the things, like, so was it more of the crowd, more of the data people crowd?
Because I felt like it was.
As Power BI evolved, it kind of got into business ops, and then we were like almost in Dynamics world. Like,
yes.
And has it rebounded back? Now we're talking data again.
Yes. So cool. The last couple conferences, when they did the Power Platform conferences, conferences, a lot of like, there's a lot of Power Apps, there's a lot of Power Automate, and then there was a whole bunch of like Dynamics and Dataverse things. And Power BI was this kind of like little guy on the side that was like,
we were like, hey, we got data.
Like, come on, this is a good product too. Yeah.
Exactly. And like, it did not feel like that this time. Cool. It felt like Power BI was front and center. We were talking about big features. We're talking about new things. I mean, the fact that Fabric now is the data platform, like pipelines, Spark, you know, real-time analytics, that ate up most of the story. There was tons of sessions.
Which is hilarious. It just means we were right all along, right? Because we were saying, hey, we could have an entire conference about Power BI and all of the data stuff that we do.
Yes.
Where is that represented?
Yes.
Now we have one. I guess my only request/recommendation for next year is don't put it during spring breaks for kids because family trips will always win. And that's where I was. I was enjoying fun in the sun in a different place. But, you know, would I love to have been there.
And they've already announced the dates for next year, I believe. I think it's the first week of April next year.
Sounds like spring break again. Man,
it's going to be a back-to-backer then.
Yeah. It's going to be MVP Summit, and then it's going to be right back behind that. It's going to be the Fabric Conference.
We'll fly together. We'll fly. Is it in Vegas again?
I believe it's also in Vegas again. Yeah, they're doing it again in Vegas. So
anyway.
Yeah.
So
I want to touch real quick on that, the self-service side, and then we'll move on. But I think that's going to be some good content for us because I don't think we've even mastered self-service with Power BI. And you're saying we're talking about all this. Yeah. So when we're talking about all this stuff from the security point of view, again, if people think we were running out of content, oh my God. Gosh, there's going to be a ton where I think we're going to see here. I am very intrigued to see how self-service goes with Fabric. So
I'm not sure I'm as intrigued. I think I'm more worried about or more thinking about, okay, how do I govern it? Like, what does that security boundary look like? And now we're talking a whole bunch of other things as well. There's a huge session. I think there was like almost 700 people in one session just talking about deployment of things inside Fabric. So Rui Romano did an amazing session on going deep on, hey, by the way, we have all these new APIs. There's a new Power BI report definition, PBIR. I don't know what it is. Anyways, there's a new report definition where there is no more strings as JSON. So everything is now just clean JSON. there's been a lot of rework, but with that, there's a whole bunch of more work and emphasize around a whole bunch of Fabric APIs that will let you deploy things. And so one of the major announcements was you can now build solutions around GitHub and track your code using GitHub, as opposed to in addition to Azure DevOps as well. So I think Microsoft is making some huge strides in deployment of things that are going to make it easier for us to continue to build on top of that pattern. It will now mean any kind of Git integrator that you have will be able to work with things that are coming out of Fabric. So that's another really, I think, major improvement here as well.
That simply means I can remove 7 extensions from VS Code now that I've been trying to use for Azure DevOps.
There you go.
So happy about that.
It'll simplify.
We got some awesome announcements, man.
So there's a ton to cover. What do you guys think about picking, like, your game changer? Pick one to start with that you think is going to resonate the most, or you think is just like one of the biggest feature announcements.
Or do you, the blog talks about 4 promises, and I feel like all the releases around there. I find it interesting that Arun's saying we have 4 promises for Fabric that we're going to deliver on. Do you want to pick a promise, or do you want to pick a product?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm fine with either one.
Pick a promise sounds pretty catchy, though.
Pick a promise, Tommy.
All right. I'll start off. I'm going to start off with my tried and true one. Man, I'll tell you what. I'm so happy with
what this. What are the 4 promises, then what is yours?
That's a better. Yeah, let's go with that.
I'm already so excited, Seth. You can tell.
I know.
I gotta tell. Yes. Yeah,
if you're gonna control the agenda, you gotta let the audience know.
Okay. I forget. Not everyone
has an internet browser up in front of them right now.
Has an internet browser or has ADHD? Yeah. So I forgot to remember that. So great blog on the Microsoft site. This is not just on the Fabric blog site. Arun covers 4 promises Fabric is going to deliver on. This came out during FabCon. The 4 promises: Fabric is a complete platform. Fabric is a lake-centric and open. Fabric can empower every business user. Sounds familiar. And Fabric is AI-powered.
All right. Tommy's picking AI-powered.
Yeah, I gotta.
I knew it.
And there's just too many reasons here that we got to go here. I don't think anything too new, but we're already seeing what Microsoft's doing. We're still in the incredibly early stage of, I think, what AI and data is going to do for the business, for the user, for careers. We're only seeing, especially on Microsoft's side, we're just seeing Copilot somewhat play a part in DAX queries and the DAX language in the Fabric platform. They're obviously investing fully in here. Again, what does AI run on? Data. So it makes more than enough sense that there's going to be this huge overlap here. 2 of the important updates in Fabric, at least that they announced in November, this Explore feature that they're actually running these DAX queries on, they're going to integrate Copilot with, which is pretty incredible. And then we've already known about custom Q&A. We've done a bunch of podcasts and episodes and conversations on how does QA actually really integrate with Power BI? Will it really work? We're going to see that. I think that's what Arun's saying. It's like, look, I don't think, to me, Arun's saying in the article, listen, we haven't hit the nail on the head yet with Q&A and Power BI, but we're going to. And we have the capabilities now to do so. So some of the questions that we're going to be able to ask on Fabric, and not just in a single report, but in the platform, this is where we need to go. This is what I think the tooling is meant for. If we're having an integrated platform of our data, this only makes sense that hopefully with control, so we can weight certain items, but we're moving in that direction. And this makes total sense from an organizational point of view, but more importantly, also from someone who's learning. Someone who's trying to get part of this tooling. There's no book here and around Fabric, and this is where AI comes into play. This is a data culture. This is going to solve, I think, a lot of data culture. So I'm personally excited about the 4th promise that Fabric is AI powered.
I think that fits you very well in what you've really delved into there, Tommy. And again, I don't know how it's all going to eventually play out. I think I feel like the AI landscape is getting incredibly competitive as far as it relates to like data platform solutions. So look, if you're not competing in this place, you're going to be left behind. And so I think Microsoft may not have the most robust AI solution yet, but I definitely think they're listening to other companies that are doing something similar and trying to glean from them what is working, and then we'll incorporate their flavor of this inside the tool. Areas that I think would be really best served inside the AI space. And again, I think AI on top of the data would make sense. Realistically, I think for me right now, for where I see things, AI works really well when you're doing code-based things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's writing M, if it's writing DAX, if it's writing notebooks, like those are three main codey-based things. People may not know how to write all the code themselves right away, but being able to talk to an AI that is able to then go sift through a bunch of examples of stuff and return results that work could be really impactful. Like one of the demos that I did for Copilot in my session, I actually had a number of, like, you can do like chaining of commands, which is kind of cool, right? You could have delete these two columns, group by this column, and then aggregate and filter by the state or whatever you want. You can just do some kind of, you know, talk to it, and it will actually sequence a number of commands together, which will do some action, which is kind of neat. That's fairly impactful. But one thing I found that was very interesting is it could actually make up data, or it could go get data and bring it to your data model. So without having any information, we said, hey, go get me a list of 50 states, include their state capitals, and add the latitude and longitude of each state capital in a table. And it went out, found things on the internet, returned the results, and gave me all the states, all 50 states, with their capitals, correct, and gave me the latitude and longitude of all the capitals across all those states, which I thought was pretty impressive, because that was something I would have to go look up, I have to go get a table, I'd have to generate all this data. And so that actually saved me a good amount of time to be able to generate data on the fly like that. So, you know, simple commands like that, you know, generate me a list of 1 to 100, you know, make me a date table that includes this, this, and this. I think those could be really impactful commands that the AI should be able to figure out how to utilize, how to build those things.
And I think we're such in an early stage, so I'll do a very brief analogy where I see where we're at, and I think where Microsoft Fabric's at with AI. Let me take you back briefly to 2007. I'm reading this book
right
now.
Hang on. 2007?
2007. Briefly. Okay. Hold on. You'll see the connection. Yeah. So let's remember the world in 2007. I'm reading this book right now. Great book. It's called Dogfight. It's about Apple and Google with the smartphone and the whole invention and where we went, what the fight was competitively between industries. But you're talking about the world back in 2007. What technology we had available and what we relied on then to what we rely on now. When you think about the internet in your pocket, being able to search for technology, the world was very clunky even when the first iPhone came out. And I think we're in this first era of AI, this first stage of AI. We're seeing that just we're just trying to introduce all the Copilot items into Fabric right now. But Mike, you're talking about the early stages of what Fabric's going, what Copilot's really going to be. It's the staging and the commands. It's the long-term memory of Copilot with you, not just a random command. This technology is already available in Microsoft with Semantic Kernel, with what they're doing. Yeah, Semantic Kernel is a huge one. They know they've invested a ton already in AI. There's an MVP program for AI. I think we're in this very, very early stage, just like when the first iPhone came out, on where AI is and how we kind of have that relationship, just like we have that relationship with our phones now. So
I don't think anybody disagrees with you.
I don't think so. Okay, that's good.
I mean, things are rough. Like, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I think it's fantastic that you're excited about it. I think the investments for every organization are going in that direction, mostly because of the profound impact when things start clicking.
Yeah.
Right. The reason it works with really well with, you know, from my perspective, from it is there's a box, right? There's a box of a language, and then it has that to always learn from and rely on. So giving us code to do things, that it's seen repetitively or like can understand, it always has the box. What organizations everybody is assuming is just going to instantly happen is, oh, my organization is the box. No, man, it's a mess of data. There is no structure to anything that's going on in all of the different areas unless you've got humans that are giving it structure, which allows, I think, AI to figure out, like, what are these stupid humans doing? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think, will it evolve? Will it eventually get to the point where it can probably figure all this out on its own? Yeah. And then we're all in trouble. So anyway, but I think like that's more of a future facing conversation than like, hey, where's Fabric at now? What are the features they just released? What can we leverage today or soon in preview? And like, there will be a shift in the conversation at one point where you're like, see, I told you. and then we'll be like, all right, Tommy, you were right.
Well, like I said, we'll go to the other promises, but this is one of their four promises that they're talking about that they want to do. So that's very interesting. But anyway, that's my pick a promise.
I'm not gonna pick an entire promise because I think Mike might want to dovetail onto a promise as well.
Okay.
But mine is the one area within Fabric is a complete platform resonates with me the most. And I see how it serves multiple purposes and why they put it in there, but it's very, I think, business user focused potentially. The one thing I want to talk about is a one sentence thing. So I have to be careful of, like, you know, I may or may not know more about it, but there is the graphic. And I think this is fundamentally one of the biggest things that business intelligence, people talking about data, talking about flows of information require a need, regardless of it's built in a tool or you're building it on your own, is a visual representation of how things are, what is going on.
Yes.
And that is task flows. Hmm. So there is this little GIF that's going on the background. So I'll only address what I see in here. But if one of the biggest things that was a turnoff when we were talking about building all these artifacts in a workspace, right? Like, what the heck is going on? Like, I have all these icons, but it's just this like thing, this list of things I can scroll down. I don't understand like what somebody is building in my ecosystem. And they showed or announced a sneak peek of a new feature they're bringing to Microsoft Fabric called Task Flows. Task Flows can help you visualize a data project from end to end. I'm super stoked about this one because it's a UI, not just for the people building all of this, but for explaining it or showing it to business users. And depending on how it's implemented, you know, could it be a path for business users to build things, right? Like, I have this graphical thing. It's very similar to like ADF or Alteryx, or, you know, like it's a graphical representation and there's relationships connected between them. How does that all work? Is it different than the pipelines and the data flows? I don't know all, right? It hasn't announced everything here. But at the same time, just having this, I think, pulls forward into the conceptual map of like, I can communicate very well now between teams, or I can communicate what's happening in this particular project or ecosystem. And I think this is probably one of the coolest features I've seen them talk about. Now, does that mean it's more important than all the security section? Absolutely not. But I think in terms of identifying what processes are doing and potentially helping business users build better processes, this looks really, really compelling.
So I'll agree with you a lot on this one, Seth. I think this is another major improvement on like part of the story of being the complete platform is that means you get a lot of things. It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. They've added real-time things, they've added, like if you go into now Fabric and you go look at, okay, I want to add an object, there's a whole page of different objects you can add now. We can add lake houses, you have data warehouses, you have SQL endpoints, you have streaming, and you have KQL data. Like, there's like so many things that could be going on. Like, what's the right pattern to use? And this is, I mean, this is already a problem. Like, we already had this issue when we were just talking about data flows, semantic models, and reports across workspaces. This was already a challenge when we had those things. Now add into all these other great tools that are lovely and they're enterprise grade and they do all these great things at speed and at volume. Super awesome. But how do you now pull all this together? And I think, you know, a couple notes I want to point on this one. I agree with you, Seth, a lot. Task flows is going to be huge. Task flows is really made for the enterprise. This is the grow up story that we've been talking about for Power BI the whole time. This is Power BI grown up.
It could very well be.
Right? I mean, in this one, you have like tag. There's like tagging on this one, so they have like these colored images, right. And in these colored images, there is like, so let's imagine you have like a pipeline. A pipeline is going to run and load a bunch of data. You may have 7, 8, 9, 10 pipelines already today. This is a problem inside Azure Data Factory when you have a lot of pipelines. Everything is like dovetailed together. So in this one, there's in the graphic here, and what they show in the demo on the in the main session that Arun was talking through was, look, you can have actually, I think Amir was actually speaking to this one specifically.
Oh, so they demo deeper at
they demoed a little bit more. They actually went in and they showed you like, here's what you can do with it. Here's why. Cool. It's not just this graphic; it's part of it. But they started talking about, look, you can have multiple artifacts in here, and then you can tag the artifact with a single color, and then that's what shows up in the diagram, and then it acts like a filtering mechanism. So like. Okay, I've got 6 pipelines that are all doing some sort of data loading, right? When you click on the colored block in the wire diagram, you can then filter down to all the objects that were tagged for that area. Because that's one of the challenges right now is, Tommy, when you and I were doing... Stuff. Yeah, when Tommy, you and I were doing like Learn Fabric series, within like 2 episodes, we had like 1,000 artifacts in this one little space. And we're like, oh my gosh, look at all the stuff we have here.
Yeah, would you name it again? Yeah.
It was like, what lake is it? Are we talking about what? So all these things now start becoming important. And even just thinking about something simple, like let's just talk about like a medallion architecture, right? Okay. I'm going to have 3 lake houses that I'm going to tag. And then in each of those lake houses, I'm going to have some sort of processing, right? I'm going to bring a pipeline in to land the data initially in bronze. I'm going to pick up the data from bronze and move it over to silver. I'm going to pick it up from silver and put it in gold. Just that process, you could have a whole bunch of items here, and the task flow piece could represent all those different artifacts as just a nice simple block diagram. Here's how the data is moving from one piece to the next. So it very well articulated. And I think this is how people are going to start communicating and what you need to build in Power BI.
So,
well, and I would argue, right, even not knowing all the feature sets, right, that are going to be capable in task flows, like what it speaks to me is a path. When we were talking about self-service, it's a path for me to teach people, like, when you do your thing, you have this process in your own ecosystem right now, right? Like,
yes.
and that process is you manually doing a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
We're going to teach you a new process and how to do that in this ecosystem. And if this is not saying it is, because I don't know fully, but if it's a more generic method to teach them, like, hey, when you're building your process, here's the color codes, here's the things we're going to do. And then we'll help you walk through that, right? Where you're kind of replacing, I'm just saying, like, I see a path here where all of a sudden the unknown of self-service could be taught to people because there's a visual tool now.
And and I think, Mike, you're like-minded today, because I thought the same thing with the grow up store, but I mean, this is the first time, and I don't think I'm too outlandish for saying this, but the first time that we actually have a universal template or a visual representation that can be reused across organizations, right?
Well, it's templates.
Like, templates, yes.
So you can show up with these things and say, I'm going to produce one of these. And this is going to be great for ISVs or people who want to rebuild these things, because
the community.
Hey, here's a pattern. Here's a pattern to go do one of these things. Right. Go get this template. This is what it looks like. And then it can just help guide you to build all the things.
The only visual representation we had before was a semantic model diagram, but that was based on a single model. So it was not, it didn't cross over. So This is really significant. And Seth, as much praise as you gave it, I think you still sold it short a little in terms of, to your point, it's a radical change in process for us and how we work.
It very well could be, yeah. But in the same tack, right? Process includes people, right? And there's a method or a path here, right? But a lot of our conversation points, and like I say that, but how do you pull them from?
Okay,
you know,
I like what you said there.
Manual Power BI, and we can do shortcuts and quick wins.
Yep.
Does this become a quick win instead of a different path we chose before? Like, it very preliminary, right? It just strikes me as like it strikes me as significant that one sentence and a GIF can make my head go click. Oh my goodness, like that could be extremely powerful for this story that we've been talking about for a really long time.
So I want to dive in there a bit more. One thing else you'll notice in the GIF here, and this is also demoed when we were at the main session here. Okay. One thing they also noted there was each of those little cards has an entire area where you document what it is. If you see in the right-hand side of the panel there, there's a little flyout panel that says, okay, task details or whatever. So you name the card and then you enter in, what is it there for? So like Seth, to your point, like we need better ways of describing like the high level, you know, architectural piece. This area is for this. Here's the bronze layer. These are things these are the activities we would expect you to do in
it's
here.
It's a useful data catalog.
Right? and it's documenting the process by which you're using. It's adding other details. Again, the designer of the system can then inject how we expect you to use it or not to use it in a certain way. Now, I love all this. This is good. My only kind of back thought on this one or step back on this one is this is great. But this is under the security boundary of a single workspace. So until we get more security items inside the context of a singular workspace, right now, what we do today is we actually use security boundaries between workspaces to keep people out of certain things. Like, for example, I may want my data engineers to work on bronze and silver data engineering activities, but I may want to put the gold data somewhere else that I want to expose more to the report builders, or the data modelers of the world. So there may be other opportunities to divide the workspace into multiple workspaces in order to control security. Now, that is a traditional way of thinking about Power BI. I don't know if that's going to hold true in the future. So as we start talking about, that's one of their other stories here, security in Fabric, right? If I can start securing things down table by table inside a lakehouse, if I can add more security, okay, inside the workspace, these are the things that people can touch or cannot touch. I don't know if they're going to get there with that, but unless I have that more fine-grained control around this, you know, task flow and who can touch what inside the task flow, I think there's a missing story here around what happens when task flows need to span multiple workspaces. What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, and at some point though, I wouldn't necessarily say a task flow, it doesn't belong in a workspace, but maybe it, as part of the other announcements, right? Like domain, and they're adding subdomains now. Like, is there a view within a set of workspaces, right, that I can get a read-only for task flows? So if I'm going to articulate what, you know, projects are doing or what, you know, things are happening with these, you know, task flows, mm-hmm. can somebody see the information without being able to modify it? And I think that's what you're speaking to is like, can this be something that can be leveraged by others that don't necessarily have permissions on the activities or, you know, tasks themselves, mm-hmm. which I think would be extremely powerful because that's the story that goes upwards versus this struggle when you go back and forth with documentation. Well, where do you want it? Like, you have a hard code. Well, if you want to know what it's doing, go look at the code. I don't know enough about the code to go look at your comments and whatever, whatever. I think this abstracts it all to the point of a very digestible thing, not only for the people creating, you know, the actual processes, but also for the visibility for others who don't need to know that, but they can look in here and say, hey, what are the things you're using? I need to go leverage the output. Oh, the output is this thing. In my detail on the right-hand side, did you tell me like, oh, this is the artifact that can be reused by you in your workspaces or that you can go attach to. And that's where the power of like, yes, it's real close to the actual, it is the actual process.
Yes.
But the view of it is not just a list. It's digestible and discoverable for other people to leverage. And I think that that if it goes that route would be what you're speaking to.
Yes.
I think regardless, this definitely goes on my game changer board. This qualifies.
Oh, yes. This is
game changer.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
100% on the game changer list.
On the wall of fame for game changers. Mike, I'm actually surprised you don't even have a t-shirt right now or a new t-shirt. There's another feature in here that you've been talking about for years that should already be a sweater.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on this one. So I'm pretty sure you're talking about the same thing I am.
Oh, yeah.
Folders in a workspace. Like, it was actually very funny. That was like one of the first announcements they did. And by the way, we're making folders now in preview. Wait a minute. Why the heck are folders in preview? How hard is it to test them? Is there not a certain amount of
point?
This better. I'm going to like, we need to go on the Twitters. We need to be like, okay, when does folders go GA? Because I'm not using them until they go GA. Like, how bad can folders be?
Microsoft, you know folders.
Yes, literally, your entire ecosystem is built on top of folders. How has this not been, one, released already, and two, why is it in GA? Why is it preview?
How was the reaction to that, by the way?
People clapped. Like, that was like a big, like, oh, like everyone was freaking out and clapping and doing things there. So that was one other big announcement that I am very pleased about hearing that one. I could tell a lot of, so I'll Seth, you picked a great feature there. You know, the Fabric is the complete platform, and I think I would also have to pick, you know, if I had to pick one guarantee of what Fabric is doing, I love the story of the complete platform. This is great. I think this would be one. However, I think what I would have to pick, and I've said this from day one, to me, is the Fabric is the lake centric and open.
Okay,
that's one I've always been kind of tooting my horn about, is like this. Sure. Like, a lot of things are cool, but the fact that every one of the compute engines that Microsoft provides to you, Vertipack, pipelines, data flows, KQL databases, like all of the things now can communicate in a, and Microsoft is changing the name here a little bit, which is interesting. So Databricks has the Delta Lake is the format that they use. Mm-hmm. Microsoft has been continually throughout the conference using the Delta Parquet format. I don't really love the fact that they're calling it Delta Parquet, because the Parquet piece is like the file type that it is. I understand They have to distinguish it away from like other competitor products that are using the Delta type format. But I wish they would just call it Delta formatted files and folder structures. To me, this is a huge monumental shift that I see Microsoft doing. They're investing a lot in making sure everything communicates into one lake with the same read write formatting. That's massive. And that's a huge undertaking from Microsoft's perspective. And I think that's going to really make a lot of value for us, the business users. Again, this to me, this is like a pivotal feature of anything that's task flow oriented. You can have task flows all day long, but if the file format's in the wrong type and it doesn't talk together, like that doesn't work. The whole story falls apart. So to me, this is so fundamental that Microsoft is committed to investing into a central one lake open format. That's huge. And that's something that I think Microsoft has not done that I've seen previously. And I think this is a big win.
This is so you. This is completely a Mike.
Right? Isn't it?
You can literally say,
we could have literally picked each other's. It's like when you go out to eat dinner and you know, you and your wife are looking at the menu and you're like, you know what? You're going to like number two. And she's like, oh yeah, you're going to like number three. Like, that's what you always order.
But that's not even true. That means
Mike because the lake house and then, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not even true, because then if that was, that would be Mike eating off my plate of food with folders and workspaces, right? Yeah. Oh, hey, that looks good, Seth.
Actually, Seth, honestly, you laugh and you joke. That's usually what happens. I order something and my wife will order something and I want to eat off of her plate. Like, that actually looks really good. I should have ordered that one. Can we share a little bit? How about we split in the middle here? Like, it's not too far off from the truth.
I thought for sure.
I accidentally ordered twice. I didn't mean to. Oh, well, I got two meals. There's a significant one here too, Mike, not just about the ingestion, and something that I'll never forget when I think the roadmap came out 2 years ago, and they're talking about Dataflow's Gen 2. It was the ability to push data out of Power BI.
Yes.
Which was a novel concept. And I remember that was my number one feature that was coming out. Well, they're talking about this in the One Lake centric promise. They're saying they're going, not yet, but apparently soon, we are introducing an external data sharing experience for data and artifacts, which I'm intrigued with the artifacts.
Okay. So this one they talked about and they demoed a bit more of this one.
Oh, yeah.
This was, to me, this is a direct competitor to, so think of it, right? You're doing all this one-like exercise. You have all these files you're making. It's in this Delta open format.
Truth.
Boom. Like common file format that's right there already out of the box, like ready to go. Any other quote unquote Power BI environment, because now we're talking about this common one-like experience, right? You can say, well, okay, that's one-like for my company. What about someone else's one-like? Or, literally Microsoft is building the next Power BI environment for another company that can literally read this. This makes total sense. And this feels like a direct competitor to what Databricks does with their Delta Share. It's again, the whole concept of keep data at rest and let everyone access it is awesome. Like this is the way to go.
Yeah. So their announcement right now is if you can share, or the upcoming external data sharing with another Fabric ecosystem.
Yes. Yes, essentially. And again, it's an open format. So I would imagine, again, I don't know the details on this one. They didn't talk about this one a bit at length. There might have been some sessions on it that I didn't get a chance to go to. One thing I will note is it was very disappointing for the conference because for me, from my perspective, I wanted to go to so many things. And my sessions were like on Thursday. The conference started on Tuesday. So literally the first 2 days I'm stressing because my sessions are all demos. So when you speak, so just as a speaker note here, when you speak at a conference, you're always making sure that your stuff is dialed, really ready to go. And you're volunteering, you're helping talk to people. But every moment I'm spending in the community area, helping out, talking to people in the hallway, like trying to make it a good experience for other people attending the conference, that's moments I'm missing out on other talks or things. And the only downside I would say is I wasn't able to go back after the conference and like listen or watch. I would have gone back and watched a lot more of those sessions and try to get or glean some details from them that I think I would have liked to have seen. There was a lot of emphasis on Direct Lake and understanding. There's a lot of technical sessions around what was going on with Direct Lake. And Phil Seamark did some deep dives in there, I think, with I can't remember who else he was talking with, but there were some major deep dives on the Direct Lake experiences of things, which I thought, this is one of the conference pieces that I'm like, this is what we needed. We need technical deep dives on various features of the tool so we can understand how do we use it the best way we can. So that was also pretty cool. Tommy, were you going to mention something else here before I moved on? I have one more.
I was talking about the external sharing. You said they did a demo of that?
I'm not sure if they did a demo, but they mentioned it. They mentioned the idea of being able to external share. Again,
it's not importing the data from another tenant. You're shortcutting it.
I believe it's going to act like a short, but there would be no reason why you couldn't do an import. Like again, the opportunity here would be very open, right?
Yeah.
The tricky part, I believe, is how do you identify? So in this external share thing, right? There always has to be like a little layer of like compute. Or some kind of, server. Like, so if you think about what lives in a table, right, you have, can the external user see the columns? And can they see the rows? And in a particular column, what data can they see of that column? So something has to be in place to like let a external user show up, send a query to your thing, whatever that data may be, and either see the whole table all up, or have a compute engine that says, okay, I heard your SQL query, and then I'll just give you the results that you need, right? So there's potentially some security mechanism that has to be on top of this, which I think would be great. I just don't know what that looks like yet, and we haven't had a blog about it. And so I need to see more information around what that looks like to feel like I understand the feature yet. I don't think I understand the feature quite yet.
I'll briefly read the sentence, and then we'll move on, because I think this is really significant. Because the experience, the external sharing is built on top of OneLake's shortcut capabilities, you can share data in place from OneLake storage locations without copying the data across tenants. External Correct. Users can access it in their Fabric tenant, in their own Fabric tenant.
Yes.
Really big. Combine it with their data and work with it across any Fabric engine and experience. That's really significant.
Yeah, I agree. And this is going to be great for any, even if there's companies that have intra company tenants, like sometimes companies have multiple tenants inside them. Like this will also be great for companies. It is the same company. You're allowed to see the same data, but I physically have two different tenants. Again, one tenant can generate the data, store it in, you know, Delta Parquet format, and other users can show up and go use it. So I think that'll be also very impactful as additionally. All right. The last thing I want to point out here, one thing that didn't get a lot of love in Amir's blog post here, which I think was underrated. There's a paragraph in the middle here, and it's underneath the section called Fabric Can Empower Every Business User. And so I don't know where the information on this is. I don't see any blogs about it. I don't see any other information. So Carly did a great demo with Christian Wade talking about what does the semantic layer going to be doing here in the future. And there was a whole session on this one. And again, it's not, I don't see anywhere. I can't figure, I don't know where the session is. So Carly, if you're listening, after you wake up in Seattle, give us a blog here. We need a blog about what's going on here.
Come on the podcast.
We're open invitation. Let's get you on the podcast. Let's talk about this feature. So they're introducing the thing, a new thing called the metrics layer. It's coming soon. It's not out yet. You'll be able to create standardized business metrics, and they are rooted in they're rooted in your measures and discoverable and intended for reuse. Trusted creators can create Power BI metrics to promote metrics. And then when you look at looking through the metrics, you can preview and explore the data using these metrics in a simple UI. And I think a lot of times this is very needed. It's going to allow you to start with a discovery, but then the experience will extend because metrics can not only be used just reports and scorecards, but they're also going to let you use it across all artifacts and fabrics, such as data science and notebooks. So they're going to try and make it a bit more of a unified experience. Hey, here's a collection of things we care about. I will say the naming of this feature called metrics seems off. I don't know what you're supposed to call it. But metrics is already another thing called metrics, which was goals. Are we going to rename the existing metrics back to goals and now call this metrics? I'm not sure what's going to happen here. So not sure how this is all going to roll together, but I think this is a really neat feature. And this feels very self-service, business user friendly. Because I think this is more of what you're going to want to share. Like, I think we're going to start. I have an opinion about how the future of this is going to go. I think we're going to stop sharing semantic models.
I think we're going to
do less of that. And instead, we're going to say, here's a collection of semantic models. Here's a collection of metrics and KPIs that make sense. Put together some things where you can join together multiple data elements from potentially multiple models. And you may have, I mean, I can imagine a day in the world where Wouldn't it be cool if you could have page one pointing to semantic model one, where you have some KPIs and metrics? And what if you had page two pointing to semantic model two? Now, you can kind of do that with composite models today, but if you decouple the report pages and think more like an app where you can have multiple reports, multiple pages kind of all bolted together, that's another big win here. Oh, speaking of apps. Another major announcement that's not in this.
Yeah.
No, there it is.
Is it in here?
We just didn't talk about it.
Okay. That's another huge one.
Multiple.
Day apps. One from apps, people have been asking for multiple apps from one workspaces.
Yeah.
That's getting delivered. That's
off my plate too.
But I mean, the audience kind of did that too.
Sorry. I remembered that one.
As noted, right? We're running out of time.
We should have had two hours for this one.
Well, we can have a second episode.
Which I
think we should, because a lot of at least my thoughts are around sometimes take for granted all of the infrastructure and security innovations that are happening. And there's a ton of that in this announcement. So I think we should lean into those things because those are the confidence builders. Those are the backbone for a lot of the things I'm talking about. Like that I think I'm very focused on the self-service story, you know, our build of things. And as they've built Fabric and combined all this, you know, together, there's a ton more that we can dive into from the announcement perspective. The last point I want to make that we probably pick up in the next one, or I'm really interested in your thoughts, Mike, are under the security in Microsoft Fabric. There's a part of this that I need to go read the blog and I want to talk about more, because he says today Microsoft is announcing a reimagined data governance experience that offers sophisticated yet simple business-friendly interaction for your multi-cloud, multi-source data estate governance practice.
Very a lot of words.
That well, and it continues to go on. But when they say reimagine, right? Like that means a lot of shifting of existing products and processes, I think. So I'm gonna go read that blog. I think we do talk about a lot of those security and data pieces that you alluded to with the lake, but there's a lot more we can unpack. And it's worthwhile to discuss that we're not gonna hit in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, and the last thing I
think that what you're talking about there, so I just want to quickly note there, I think this is a purview related improvement.
It is
what that's, or I think they're alluding to on this one. When so good, I think purview is okay at this point, but it's not where it needs to be. Like it needs to be better. Yeah, Tommy, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the last thing I'll say, and I think Seth, that's a great point. We continue this conversation. I think a lot of the kind of the back end of I'm seeing of this current of information is that we're going to see a lot of shift in roles, right? We have the BI analyst, you have the data engineer, as we've known it over the last 7 years. I see a lot with the task flows, this metric layer, which I'm very interested about with the AI, I think capabilities that are coming. I think we're going to see another shift in roles, and then you're not going to just see it. You're not going to have a business analyst. And
I can't wait to argue with you on this.
We're fighting words already. I already disagree with you.
Let's do a baby clap.
Let's go.
Teeing up for the next episode. Let's just go.
They just got some bounce kind of thing, right?
I see what you're saying, Tommy. I think I see what you're saying in the fact that there is now more opportunity for users to shift what role they're currently in. And the tooling is now in place for them where there's going to be less boundary, less friction for them to move. So I think what's happening is you're now bringing this huge world of business developers into this new ecosystem. I think you're going to have a whole bunch of people at ground zero showing up, and some people are going to embrace this and very quickly move through, oh, I came in as a business user where I only consumed reports. Now I'm building models. Now I'm building data engineering. Now I'm exploring data science because now the tooling has made it so easy for me to explore other things. So I think that's what you're saying. I don't think the roles change. However, I think we need to more clearly define what they are and when a person is ready to move to the next role. I think that's more important now, is to clearly define what kind of role you are in, because that will now help you understand what is the proper skill set I should understand. Because now you're going to look over the wall and say, oh, I see there's someone over here doing data modeling and data engineering. I want to do that. What skills do I need to be successful there? And I think there's not clear definition to what is the next step in the ladder to get to that next level.
I'm already adding this as a topic. That's okay.
All right. Next week or Monday. Thursday. All right. Anyways, we've already done kind of final thoughts here. My final thought is around all this. This is great. Love the conference. Super awesome. Can't wait for next year. Very excited for all the energy that was coming out of it. All the new announcements and features were great. I think this very much aligns to Microsoft's strategy. You can definitely tell they're putting a lot of eggs in this basket. This is where they're investing their time. So I'm very pleased. I feel like the Power BI team was a certain size. I don't know what size it was before they started doing all the Fabric things. Now that they've added Fabric, it feels like the Microsoft team, particularly around Fabric, has substantially grown. 2x, 3x, I don't know what the number is, but it really feels like there's a lot more people jumping into the mix that is now producing Fabric. So I think that is a double-edged sword for Microsoft. If you don't have a clear vision, if you don't have a clear direction of where you're going, you get a lot more deviations and things that don't smoothly work together and seamlessly integrate. So as long as this thing continues to grow the way it's growing, and everything still works together, I think we're in a good place. I think this is going to be a good long run. This is a very side note. When I made the decision to leave like the corporate world and go full in on Power BI, I kept saying to myself, is Microsoft going to kill this? Am I jumping into Power BI and I'm making a bad career move because it's going to be like a short-lived thing and then some new tool is going to come out and it's going to be obsolesced, right? And then I thought about, well, Excel is still this massive tool and people have made basically entire careers around just doing only Excel and being an Excel expert. And I felt like, wow, I hope that this Fabric and Power BI thing becomes like this Excel thing. And after this conference, I felt like, yeah, this is solid. They're investing in it. I've picked a good product to tie myself to. And I think this is going to last a long time. It's going to add long-term benefit value to companies. This is not something that's just going to be a flash in the pan and out, and we're going to move on to the next thing. This is a career move. No.
Yeah. Listen, it's either this or a pizza shop for me, that's for sure.
Tommy, you would do great at a pizza shop.
You would do great at a pizza shop.
I would love to order pizza by the inch from you.
Yeah, it would Fabric. I got to think of a good pizza name.
Yeah, we'll have to have Tommy's Pizzeria.
Power BI Pies. Yeah.
Power BI by the inch.
There you go.
Awesome. Thank you very much for listening to the episode. This was super good. I hope you enjoyed reading. If nothing else, go hit the blog from Arun. Go read it. There's a lot of great details in there. Stay tuned to the Microsoft Fabric and Power BI blogs as well. I'm pretty sure that they're also going to have a lot more investments on additional elements there as well. So I for sure think there's going to be a lot more additional blogs and details and things coming out in the near future here. So I'm very excited to hear about all these additional announcements. And Microsoft, if you're listening, Carly, Zoe, if you're out there listening to the podcast, we'd love to have you on and talk more about this metrics feature that apparently is brewing behind the scenes. So we want to know more details. Let's get that going. With that, we really appreciate your listenership. Thank you for spending a good long hour with us just thinking through all the things. We appreciate your time. We know your time is valuable. Please, if you like the podcast, if this is adding value to your day, let somebody else know that you're finding some value from it so that they can also enjoy conversation. And that's the only way we really promote the podcast is through word of mouth. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
So we're going to get this right. Apparently from the Peanut Gallery, I haven't been saying this fluently. So
yes, let's hear it.
You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. It's pretty normal. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. If you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode, head over to PowerBI Tips/podcast, leave your name and a great question. Here we go. Join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips social media channels.
There it is. That was it. That was great. That's the one.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
Right. Perfect.
We're good.
Awesome.
Bellissimo.
Excellent. Thank you all so much. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We'll see you on the next episode.